The date is June 8th, 1984, and we're watching Gremlins. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Merry Christmas!
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Barney to my Gizmo.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And this week, we continue on with our Christmas movies and brought back a man we haven't talked to since our Bad Boys episode. Please welcome back for his hat trick episode, Mr. Kingsley Long.
Hey, the original Bad Boy right here. Woo!
There you go. Yeah, welcome back, Kingsley. It's been a minute, but I'm excited to have you here for a Christmas movie. I mean, would you agree Gremlins is 100% a Christmas movie?
Absolutely, just like Die Hard.
Yeah, exactly.
Hand in hand.
Yeah. So now, we have not had you on yet for a Christmas movie, so we like to ask our Christmas guests, what is your go-to holiday movie usually?
Wow, go-to holiday movie?
I mean, you mentioned Die Hard already. I mean, we 100% agree on this show. Die Hard is a good Christmas classic.
It is, and it's also because it's on TV like 12 times a day, so yeah. You can't miss it during the holidays. So. But it's always great to watch. I always find myself watching the whole thing anyways.
Yeah.
It's great. I don't really have a go-to, you know? I just watch whatever's on. And then there's surprisingly a lot of musicals that are on during Christmas.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're kind of fun. They're a little different. They're not really holiday-themed, but, you know, I don't know.
Are you, like, a classic in terms of, like, a Miracle on 34th Street or It's a Wonderful Life? Or are you, like, a modern classic of things like Scrooged, Elf, Christmas Vacation? Like, what would you lean more towards? Or, as we discovered with Colin, the Hallmark classics as well, the Hallmark love stories, those are also, I guess, a genre upon themselves, I would almost say.
That's
true. Yeah, to anyone who hasn't seen it, I highly recommend Christmas in Evergreen. There's four of them. Watch them all. They're very enjoyable.
The Evergreen quadrilogy. what's your leaning, Kingsley?
Well, you know, it's a classic, and it's funny that it's very apropos because we just talked about this in real life. But Elf with Colin Farrell. Is it Colin?
Colin, no, Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell.
Colin Farrell, that would be a very different movie.
That's more of a shoot 'em up. But so that one I remember watching around the holidays as just such a, well, obviously it's Christmas theme, so like the theme is perfect, but just, it's so funny. It's just seeing Will Ferrell and who's the girl that's in that one?
Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah. Zooey Deschanel.
We just covered this show last week, so we're already on top of this knowledge here for you. Yeah.
So yeah, you're bang on. But yeah, that's a good one to watch over and over again.
Yeah, right on. Well, this week we are looking back at June 1984, when the movies in theaters were Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, Firestarter, The Natural, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and of course, our movie for today, Gremlins, which earned $212.9 million on an $11 million budget. I did read that originally they did want this coming out at the Christmas season, but instead they looked at the calendar of movies that were coming out and they're like, it's some ghost movie that's coming out and an Indiana Jones sequel, whatever. We'll go up against these guys instead because they thought they would have this cushy spot. And of course, Ghostbusters and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom come out and just crush this because they didn't know that that's what they were going up against for real. And so I did read, though, that this movie did do better in New York City because people in New York, they can hold a grudge. They were still furious about the delays in traffic that the Ghostbusters shoot had done for a couple of days, that it actually outperformed in New York more than any other markets for going up against Ghostbusters and Indiana Jones at the same time. So
that's,
I thought,
awesome.
That was funny. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yes, and as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So,
you laugh because 37 years, right? Like, they should have seen it by now, but whatever.
We still like
to warn people. We don't want hate mail. So, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, and as I often do, I have multiple, First is cute, clever, mischievous, intelligent, dangerous.
Sounds like a perfect setting for a movie.
Yeah, and that's five separate sentences, like cute, period, clever, period, mischievous, period. Yeah.
Hmm.
Second is We're Back, and that's from a 1985 re-release of the movie.
I was like, what?
Exactly. Yeah. Third is They'll Be Expecting You. I don't follow that one.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Does it tie into anything? I don't think so, no. Fourth up, I've got What You See Isn't Always What You Get. That one works for me a little bit. I got a lot of blank stares coming from Colin.
Yeah, I'm not liking any of these.
Okay, well, number five, the final one, let's try to bring it home strong here. I don't know whether it will be. They're clever. They're mischievous. They'll get into the kitchen, the basement, the garage. They'll get into anything.
Once
there's still more. Once they get in, you're in for it.
Wow, so they're talking about my kids.
Nice. But those may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
Oh man, this one was tough.
Hopefully this is satisfactory.
When his dad brings home a new pet he stole from a Chinese market and gives it to him for Christmas, Billy Peltzer is ecstatic. With his new pal Gizmo, an unexplained creature known as a Mogwai, by his side, what could go wrong? A lot, apparently, because Billy is incapable of following three simple rules. No sunlight, no water, no feeding after midnight. When Gizmo accidentally gets wet, he starts shooting fluff balls which turn into more Mogwai, but these ones are more mischievous than Gizmo and wind up tricking Billy into feeding them after midnight, causing them to shed their fluffy exteriors and transform to monstrous gremlins. As the gremlins wreak havoc on the city, it's up to Billy and Gizmo to save the day. Will they do it? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Nice.
Weird,
but the theme music. You need theme music after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It worked out, though. No, yeah, that one, you say it was tough, but I think you nailed it.
It was more just tough because I found it really hard to find, like, funny plot points to really, like, beef up the comedy I usually like to have in my 60-second synopsis.
Well, I remember back when you did Willow, you made some Lord of the Rings jokes. I was thinking you could have thrown in something like, you know, an animal called a Furby, I mean Mogwai, but
there
I mean,
yeah.
I guess it goes the other way. Like, it's Furby that ripped off the Mogwai, so I guess it was there first, but...
I get you.
Yeah. I mean, for me, this is one of those movies that I'm not a huge follower of the Gremlins movie. And actually, I remember the second one appealing more to a younger me than this one did. But I mean, I have seen this several times. This isn't one, though, that is super clouded by nostalgia for me. This isn't one where I sit there and go, oh, man, like I remember watching this every year. This is one that I'm familiar with, but I don't know if it necessarily falls into one of the greatest of all times for me. I just like having unusual Christmas movies. I do remember I did have a Gizmo doll, and I had a few other, like, Gremlins figurines.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Kingsley? What kind of experience do you have with Gremlins?
Well, you know, it's interesting because back then, and I didn't really get it back then, but now, looking back, I feel like Gremlins came out as, like, the ultimate Christmas marketing movie. Because
yeah, okay.
It's like, you know, it's like Christmas was the time where, you know, you want to buy shit and you want to just sell stuff.
Yeah.
And so, and I know that this was around the time where all these big other blockbusters were selling figurines for, you know, Indiana Jones and Back to the Future. And so why not come up with a doll-like thing where you can sell to kids,
yeah, right?
And then some of the things are like, you can't feed it after midnight. You can't get it wet because all these things will happen. And I think the marketing people were like, man, we can make a killing on selling this little fur baby, you know,
and
it does stuff. And then now let's make it into a movie and make it and spin that around, make some more money.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're talking merchandising. And I mean, this is also a year off of Return of the Jedi. And so, I mean, even Star Wars toys and Ewoks specifically would have been running rampant at the same time as this cute furry little
totally.
Son of a gun, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. Now,
did this come before or after Tribbles in Star Trek?
Oh, way after.
Was it way Tribble. After? Yeah.
That was the 60s for Tribbles on Star Trek.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, no, I remember there was a Next Generation episode that used footage from the original episode.
Yeah,
no,
okay, right.
But no, that was a Kirk and Spock adventure. That was the Tribbles. Yeah, Trouble with Tribbles.
So this now, Gremlins really is kind of like a ripoff of Tribbles.
Yeah, there you go.
In a way, they are. Yeah, Colin, what about you? I believe this is another one where we've caught you and you have no past experience with this movie. Is that true?
Yeah, but I didn't even really know that until I watched it. I would have thought, I thought ahead of time that I had seen this movie, but as I watched it, it became pretty clear that I had never seen it.
Okay.
But, like, I do have some, like, I remember Gremlins growing up, I think more from the toys, and I was trying to remember, but I think I had two Gremlins things when I was a kid. I'm pretty sure I had, you know those old viewfinders where you put the little disc?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I had one of those. That you could just look at the pictures. And then I also think I had like a little children's book that came with a tape.
With a tape? I think I've got that sitting out on my in my living room right now.
Yeah, and it was just like a story about Gizmo or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, my mom was cleaning some stuff out, and so I ended up with all these books and tapes that I used to have as a kid.
Yeah.
And so I haven't gone through them all, but I think my Gremlins, I think I had the Gremlins one as well. It might be in there. That's crazy. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of my experience with Gremlins. Like, the thing that I was shocked about with this movie is that it's a lot scarier than I thought Gremlins was.
Yeah.
Like, I only ever think of Gremlins like cute little fuzzy Gizmo.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really... I don't remember the bad parts.
Yeah. Well, and see, that's where I remember the second one more, because the quality of the Gizmo puppet improved for the second Gremlins. And so they were doing things like I remember there was in the second one, there's this Rambo ripoff where Gizmo ties a little red headband around him and he makes a bow and arrow out of a paper clip.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, okay, let's jump into Gremlins. It's directed by Joe Dante. I did read, though, that Tim Burton was asked to direct at one point. That would have been interesting. It's produced by Michael Fennell, but of course has the Spielberg, Kennedy, Marshall executive producer behind it. And as we've mentioned in our Gremlins episode and our Home Alone episode, written by Chris Columbus. And so we start this movie with like a very film noir type voiceover from Randall Peltzer, who I find it interesting that Randall goes by Rand in this movie, very much like Brandon goes by Brand in Goonies. It's like, like, does Chris Columbus not know how to make up nicknames?
You just want to be different.
But yeah, he's in Chinatown, and you know, he's got his whole, yeah, like I said, film noir, nobody's got a story like this one. Nobody.
I like how they have to go into Chinatown. Like, back in the 80s, that's when you get all the mysterious stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Chinatown.
Like, yeah.
Really? They just have pieces of shit, crappy stuff in there.
It's the no man's land.
Yeah.
Yeah, look around, everything's for sale. And, I mean, yeah, I like his line about the fact that it's like, well, no wonder you need to pull people in off the street. But now, okay, now, Kingsley, you are an Asian man, so it's kind of nice that this whole Chinatown scene takes place, because I do have a question, and a genuine question.
Sure. For you.
Now, there's the point where, in the store, Rand Peltzer says something about... You know, with his toothbrush invention that he's got about the dragon breath, and he looks down at the dragon at the on the counter, and you hear like a gong sound. Is this offensive to you? And like, I'm sincerely asking, because we're living in 2021, where it is good for a Caucasian cis male to be asking questions of other races and genders and all that sort of thing. So like, I am sincerely like, do you find that this is something that's gone too far, or are you into the comedy behind it?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Sean. And, you know, cause I represent every Asian male on the planet when when I say this, but, yeah, you know, the movies back in the 80s were a different time, as we know. You know, I don't think it was racist in that regard. I think things like that, they were trying to portray maybe what Chinatown was like at the time. And yeah. And from my recollection, I believe that was kind of what Chinatown was like anyways. So okay. I think it was maybe portraying some stereotypes, but at the same time, I think it was just being over the top stereotypes yeah. of what Chinatown really is. And things like gongs, I mean, that technically really is something that to scare away demons, you know, yeah. like scare. So it's not really an offensive thing.
Okay.
It's the intent behind it. Like if someone's using that stuff to be mean about it, that's different.
Yeah. But
this was done in kind of like a tongue in cheek, over the top kind of thing. And so if you're asking me, I did not find it offensive at all.
Okay. Ultimately the representation was pretty good in this movie. Then you would think
the only thing yeah. is what's the dude's name again? Mr. Wong or Mr. Wing?
Well, I just know him as grandfather, isn't it? Well, he might be Mr. Wing. Yeah, that might be
yeah.
what it is.
I thought he had a name too, but anyways, he was, again, you know, and we can delve deeper into this, but because I feel like there was not a lot of representation and, you know, movies that were made back in that era were very stereotyped in that regards where, you know, all the Asian male characters were all secondary or tertiary characters. And they're all like, all the Asians were like nerds. And they were yeah. all, you know, not the kind of, you know, representation that we have today, right?
Yeah.
And so I think having this this Asian Gandalf back then was just really over the top, and you know that it wasn't offensive to me, but at the same time, it's like, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah,
like that's all you could do.
My question was like, what's up with his eye? Like, why does his eye have to be that way?
Like, yeah, the one fucked up milky eye. Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, the interesting thing I read, like, grandfather is played by Ki Luke. The thing I found interesting, though, is other options for this role, they looked at Mako, and I'm not sure exactly who Mako is. I went through his IMDb, and there's a lot of stuff that he's been in that I recognize, but there's no huge thing that I remember him from, but I've seen him a million times. He's got 163 credits. But I read that grandfather could have also been played by John Pertwee, who is one of the Doctor Who's.
So it just makes me wonder, like,
were they going to keep it with Chinatown at that point? Or would it have been a different backstory?
Or the movie was going to be set in, like, Victorian England.
Yeah.
And he was just going to be an old shopkeeper.
Yeah, or it could have very easily been, like, you know, Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that kind of setting.
Yeah. Now, okay, now one more, like, you know, I want to get off the topic of this, but one more question about, you know, offensive stereotypes or whatever. What about the fact that this little Asian kid in the store is dressed exactly the same way as Short Round
in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom
with his Yankees cap and...
Like, what yeah. was it with
little Asian kids in the 80s wearing Yankees caps? Is that a thing? Were you a little Asian kid in the 80s wearing a Yankees cap, Kingsley?
No, I was not. I was okay. not at all. Because I think it's different when you get, you know, first generation, when you just kind of like come off the boat and come overseas into America. If you're a little kid, like you hear about New York City, you hear about all this, you know, America stuff. So yeah. I think the parents probably want to emulate the kids and say, hey, let's get you into this culture in yeah. America. Let's wear a Yankees hat. Let's, you know, do all this kind of shit. But for me, you know, growing up in Canada, and being second gen, my parents just dressed me kind of like a nerdy little kid, you know, and like everyone else. But I think, again, that's just a stereotype that, you know, movies used back then. And it's funny that you relate it to Short Round because that's kind of who I thought of too when
yeah.
I saw that movie.
And both movies in theaters at the exact same time.
Yeah. Let's find a character that all white people be comfortable with. This is what he's going to look like.
Maybe that was some sort of like, was this is Spielberg?
Yeah, they're both Spielberg properties. Yeah, they're executive produced. Yeah.
Because doesn't Lucas directed Indiana Jones, right?
They're both
Spielberg movies?
Well, this one's produced by Spielberg, but Indiana Jones is directed by Spielberg.
Oh, okay.
And produced maybe, by Lucas.
Maybe there was like cross they're like, oh, maybe they just had like one guy or they just wanted to share a wardrobe while they were there.
Yeah, share a wardrobe.
Yeah.
So how come an inventor in an 80s movie always has to be one terrible at it? And two, why do they always have to live in a disaster of a home? Why can't they depict an inventor that actually has good inventions that work all the time? Like this...
this that'd be a boring movie.
The bathroom buddy that he has. Like, what a terrible invention that is. You've got this brick in your pocket. He just can't ever get the pressure on the toothpaste right. But it's just like, you look at all around his house, all the Peltzer items that they have, the juicer and the coffee maker that like pours out like a molasses type coffee. Like,
I thought some of them were also, they kind of remind me of, who's the kid from the Asian kid from the Goonies?
Data.
Data, yeah. Like, it's kind of like the same scenario, except I feel like Data's stuff actually like worked a little better. Like, I didn't understand the egg cracking machine. Like, is it so hard to just
crack an egg with your hand on a bowl? Or
so
your
much more like, convenient.
You need this. You need this machine. Like the machine, I just feel like wouldn't be able to amass
the proper pressure to perfectly crack an egg. I actually don't think it's possible for a machine to ever crack an egg well.
Probably not, no. I mean, I think I've seen ones, like, for people that decorate eggs professionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, they make hole punchers that would help you blow eggs out. So, I mean, there must be some sort of precision that you can make with some sort of equipment.
I feel like if the yolk doesn't matter to you, like if you wanted to have scrambled eggs, then sure. But if you want to maintain the yolk,
yeah,
it's difficult.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, I can
get behind that.
Let's
one.
Get into the science. I want to dig deeper into the science of eggs.
Well, I'm wondering about the juicer, because it looks like the juicer, you're just supposed to throw it in, peel and all. Like, how does it separate and peel? Like, I understand that's the science that we're dealing with here, but yeah. I just don't even understand how you would think that that would work, or how it does work. Or is that how juice is made when it comes to I guess there is such thing. Like, a Tropicana must have a mass size one of these. They don't have people sitting there peeling oranges by hands.
I don't think
it's like, how do you sort coins?
Yeah,
automatically they just do it.
Just do it.
I was gonna say I came across a stat about the Gremlins that they were trying to have monkeys, like actual monkeys, play the Gremlins in the movie.
Yeah, I read that,
but they scrapped it obviously because they got freaked out as soon as they put you know, like these masks on their heads and stuff.
Yeah,
you can't have freaking out monkeys is bad for movies.
Yeah, they freaked the fuck out and started throwing shit around, like literally, like yeah, yeah. I thought that was great, but then I read when it came to like the three rules of the Mogwais and or whatever or the Gremlins, that they put the light, the one about bright light in there, so that they could film most of this in dim light and in at nighttime, because it would help hide the limitations of the puppets. So that was a rule out of convenience. Now, what do we think about the rules? I have to ask about the logic of the rules. Like, first of all, you can't feed them after midnight.
Yeah. How does it know what
internal clock? Some sort of internal clock, right?
Is it time zone based? Yeah. Do they know where they are? What happens if you travel with your Mogwai? Right?
Do you have to maintain the midnight of this town?
Yeah.
It is interesting.
Yeah, or maybe it's when the moon hits a certain angle.
Yeah, because it's always midnight somewhere,
right?
So... yeah, it would have been a better rule if they said don't feed them after sundown, because then sundown is always sundown.
There you go.
That's true. Let's rewrite this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my biggest problems with this movie is the fact that I can't stand that you never get a real story behind what a Mogwai is and why it is the way it is, or where it's from, or like,
or
what
how
they're...
a living animal can survive without water, because it says no water, not even to drink.
Yeah,
that goes against everything in biology that I know.
Because
doesn't everything need water to survive?
But is that? But what about any? So what about any liquid? Can you feed it like pop?
Yeah, can I give it milk?
Why water?
Yeah. And then it got me wondering, like, when they're walking around in the snow, why aren't they multiplying? Because as soon as that snow touches their body heat, it would start melting immediately, and boom, water. I mean, I've gone tobogganing in the winter. I know how wet I am when I get home. Like, my hands are pruney after a day of tobogganing or skiing or something like that, and it's just, you know, I'm wet. Why wouldn't they be wet from walking through the snow? They should just, there should be billions of these things running around just from that one walk that he takes through the snow at one point.
Oh, maybe there are millions, but there's just the one that's just, that got stolen away in Chinatown.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I guess it all served to like set up a narrative plot point, but they definitely could have done with a little bit more explanation on it's just some background.
Yes and no, right? Because like, you don't want too much explanation, because then it becomes even more silly.
It takes away the mystique.
Yeah, you need to just suspend your disbelief.
That's true.
But I mean, like, I'm even looking. There's the scene where they're at the department store towards the end, and Spike, he is going to be throwing himself in that fountain to make more fucking gremlins. He's determined. Right? The rest of them have been blown up in the movie theater at this point, and he's like, no, I'm going to climb this fountain. And as he's climbing the fountain, the thing is spraying him. But he has to get to the top and stick his fingers in before, like, something starts happening. Like, he's been getting wet the whole time. Why aren't there gremlin balls jumping off his back left and right?
I don't know. Maybe he had a mysterious shield.
The rules are so flawed in this movie.
Yeah. Can't look at the holes. Don't look at the holes.
But I think one of my favorite things about the three rules, though, is when he first presents the Mogwai to Billy. And Billy pulls him out and everything like that and takes a picture of him. He, you know, Gizmo freaks out.
And then his dad's like, oh yeah,
there's some very important things I meant to tell you. It's like, shouldn't that happen before you let him open the basket?
Like, my favorite part of that is like, he's like, oh yeah, I need to tell you some things. And he's like, he doesn't like light. You already know that.
But he can't be in sunlight. Sunlight will kill him.
There's a lot of like animal abusers in this movie. Even in the opening scene when Billy's at his job at the bank or wherever he is.
Yeah.
And that woman comes in.
Mrs. Deagle. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
She's terrifying. She
might be worse than the gremlins.
Like, I can't believe they had a scene where she literally talks about putting a dog in a spin cycle of a dryer.
Yeah. Yeah, she is terrible, but she is so cartoony, right? Like, yeah, when she comes in, she is so much like Mrs. Hannigan in Annie. That's who she reminds me of. And it was at that point where I had the question to myself, who's this movie for?
Because
when you have this Annie-type villain come in all of a sudden, and she's got the same sort of, like, Wicked Witch of the West music when she's coming in, is this a kid's movie, or is it for adults? Like, I know it's going to get violent later, but then you throw in this character, and so it's like, who is this movie for?
Yeah, I don't really know, actually. I kind of agree. Like, I think it strikes me as that's just kind of a thing of these types of 80s movies, where it's, like, something for the whole family, but it's like, it starts out being okay for kids, but I think by the halfway point, it's like, if your kid was under 10, maybe they needed to not watch the rest. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know that I have said a fact wrong in some of our past episodes where I say that Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is the reason for a PG-13 rating. It's actually a combination of this movie and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So this is one of those movies that helped create the PG-13 rating. And so they knew that it wasn't violent enough to be an R-rated movie, but it definitely wasn't tame enough to be PG. But it's just like, but it feels like it's for under 13 anyway. but it's not. It's too violent for under 13. But I read it could have been much more violent, because at one point they wanted to have like the gremlins go and take over a McDonald's
and eat the people
instead of the burgers. Yeah. I also read that there was going to be a scene where they kill Barney the dog. And there was also going to be a scene where they decapitate Mrs. Peltzer and throw her head down the stairs. And it's
wow.
Yeah. Like, apparently in the original movie, it was also supposed to be that Stripe and Gizmo were the same person. Like, it wasn't originally two, and it was Steven Spielberg that said, no, you need one of these guys that stays good. But originally, it was going to be Gizmo turns into Spike or Stripe or whatever his name was.
I wonder if this was, like, the training ground for some of the movie execs to see, you know, how far they can get with this kind of genre.
Yeah.
Like, maybe this was the start of, you know, things like Chucky and, you know, these kind of, or not even to that degree, because you can lump in like E.T.
Small soldiers.
Genre, right? And then just like they just started getting scary and scarier, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like Gremlins almost might have worked better as a full-on, like, Christmas horror movie.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I kind of feel like part of, like, its issue is that it kind of, like, toes that PG-13 line.
Yeah.
And it's one of those movies where I feel like it would have almost been better if they just pushed it to, like, a full R.
Yeah.
Then you have, similar to Chucky, you have the, like, funny, you know, whatever, like, side-by-side of this, like, children's toy murdering people. Like, these things that, for whatever reason, they just end up being humorous.
Yeah. Hmm. I love how the city is so unapologetically Hill Valley from Back to the Future, though.
Yeah.
They don't even try to dress it differently.
There's a point when he's walking, or I think it's when the old lady is walking down the street, and I was just looking at it as, like, they're not doing anything to disguise the fact that this is a soundstage. Like,
yeah,
it's just all there until you get to the big Burger King, like, logo on the storefront. You're like, okay.
The one super shiny store that's there is the Burger King. And how did you know which way I was trying to direct this conversation? That means it's time for Sponsorship Corner.
I mean, we've only done, like, almost 70 of these shows. I feel like sometimes I can just sense.
Yes, I do absolutely love that the shiniest sign on the block is for Burger King. But always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Gremlins is brought to you by the New York Yankees, the YMCA, DC Comics, Burger King, Hallmark, Coors, Jack Daniels, Coca-Cola, Canon and Polaroid, Casio, Marlboro Cigarettes, Honda, Mobil Gas, Kelken Cat Food, Kentucky Harvester Tractors, Allstate Insurance, Sapphire 9 Radio, which I believe is Volkswagen exclusive when I looked it up, yet Billy's Beatles logos are never shown, so, like, I don't think Volkswagen is a sponsor, but their radio is. I don't know. Milky Way, Snickers, and Three Musketeers Chocolate, Peerless Movie Projector, Montgomery Ward, Coleman, Sevilore Rafts. It's a raft company. I don't know. I don't raft. Donkey Kong, Clue, and Boggle, Wilson, Prince, Bauer, Spalding, and Kennex Sports Equipment, DP Superstar, Exercise Mat, Barbie, Hot Wheels, and Looney Tunes, plus the movies It's a Wonderful Life, The Road Warrior, The Twilight Zone Movie, and Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Also, the fictional WDHB News, Fountain's Xmas Trees, Dory's Tavern, Deagle Real Estate, and Peltzer, the company responsible for the Bathroom Buddy. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Very nice. Very nice.
Deagle Real Estate on the sign. Did you catch the hours of operation for Deagle Real Estate?
No, what'd it say?
10:30 to 11:15 a.m. Monday to Friday. She's open for 45 minutes a day.
That's when the best work gets done. Right?
And then she takes the lunch. Oh, boy.
You know, what I find interesting is that, you know, the town or the city that in New York where this all takes place, isn't it some sort of, like, supposed to be almost like a Rockwellian kind of, like, upstate New York city?
Seems to be, yeah.
And yet they have, like, this ghetto Chinatown where, like, all this stuff happens. Is that where Chinatown is, or do they go into New York City?
No, I think this is more of a suburb. Yeah, I mean, I think he was in the city.
Because
got it.
This dad seems to travel, because we see him at the fair later on, or whatever, the inventors convention.
Right.
Okay, where we see that. Like the H.G. Wells time machine in the background, because it's like, yeah, that's an invention that's real. Okay. But that's where we get a few cameos in the movie. Steven Spielberg is one of the guys, that one of the inventors on the floor. And there were a couple others. I don't remember. Like the composer of this movie was also one of them. Stuff like that.
Okay. I don't remember any of the music. Was there actually good music to this movie?
It was very synthesizer sounding. It almost sounded like the synthesizer version of a harpsichord is almost.
But it sounded like.
I don't.
Wow. So we're not talking about like Hans Zimmer type level.
No.
Not even like I'm surprised they didn't spring for John Williams,
because he was slaving away trying to do more Star Wars.
Well, he was over on Indiana Jones. I guess he would have been on Indy,
yeah. Oh right, yeah.
So we've got an '80s movie. So we also have Phoebe Cates, Judge Reinhold, and Corey Feldman. You know, got to make sure that we get that trinity of '80s actors in there.
I was pleasantly surprised by Corey Feldman. I feel like I gave him a lot of shit when we watched The Goonies. But, like, he's a decent actor for a child actor. In this movie, I would kind of liken him to Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone. Like, I felt he doesn't have as big a role, but, like, I felt his performance was, like, it always just seemed so sincere and genuine. Like, sometimes when you watch child actors, they come off, like, so, like, really, really forced, like, "Hey, Billy!" But I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, but he has, like, three scenes. I mean, you know, and once the gremlins start attacking, we don't even see him anymore at all. But it all starts off as his fault. Like, he's the one that knocks over the water. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, he was one of those child actors that was cute in his day, and, you know, I think he was perfect for that movie, actually. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Phoebe Cates.
Yeah.
She's definitely, like, my 80s movie crush, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I first saw Howie Mandel, right? Yeah. Well, but he was, like, the voice. Like,
yeah, the voice of Gizmo.
Yeah. He did that voice, like, years after that. And
Bobby's World.
Is that the same guy? Yeah, it's the same guy.
Yeah, Bobby's World. I remember that cartoon. Yeah, a couple other of the voice actors in this movie were Frank Welker and Michael Winslow, which makes 100% total sense that both of those guys would be involved.
Very nice.
Yeah. With Billy, by the way, with the interesting connection of, like, Judge Reinhold and that whole Brat Pack era, this was Billy's, or Zach Galligan's theatrical debut. But Judd Nelson and Emilio Estevez were both up for the possibility of Billy.
So it
could have been even more stereotypical 80s if one of those guys had been cast.
I could have seen Emilio doing that role.
Yeah.
Well, one other possible casting option as well is for the role of Randall, who is played by Hoyt Axton. I read that Pat Hingle, who is Commissioner Gordon from the Batman movies, or Pat Harrington Jr., who is Schneider on One Day at a Time.
Oh, both of those
guys were possibilities to play our crazy inventor, Rand Peltzer.
Interesting. I don't know this Hoyt Axton. Has he been in anything else since then?
I don't know what else he's been in. I remember it was a big list, but yeah.
Okay.
Well, what else do you remember Zach Galligan from other than Gremlins 2?
Nothing. These are all like two time actors, and that's it.
Well, yeah, like all the actors that had a much more illustrious career were the ones that, like, got no screen time, like Corey Feldman and Judge Reinhold. You know, it's like,
right
now I do have to say too, like, Mrs. Peltzer, Lynn Peltzer, who is played by Frances Lee McCain, I'd like to see more things with her in it, because, man, is Mrs. Peltzer a badass.
Yeah, and again, back in the 80s, you don't see a lot of these badass women.
No, she single-handedly takes down three of them by, like, stabbing one to death, throwing one in the microwave, and, like, blending the other one. Like, she's just kicking ass.
Yeah, she was like the Steven Seagal. Back in the day. Just taking care of business
in the kitchen. It's got to be in the kitchen if you're like under siege.
Under siege,
exactly.
Yeah.
Nah, you got it.
I wonder if the decision for her to go that route instead of getting her head chopped off was
if that was like her decision or like her, like if she wanted to make that move or if that was just a script decision.
No, from what I read, it sounded like it was a script decision because that would have been a hard R for sure. Yeah. And they were trying to bring it down. So, but I love those swords hanging by the front door too, where every time someone comes through that front door, one of the swords falls. It's just like, oh, that sounds like foreshadowing to me. What was that sound I heard?
I was going to say,
at first it reminded me of the gag in Modern Family where Phil always pulls off the top of the banister. I don't know if you guys have seen that show. But it's a very similar thing. Like, it's just this, the house just falling apart or whatever.
Yeah, it's people hitting the McAllister's bronze statue.
I was trying to follow the, like, Phoebe, like, Kate and Billy, their relationship, they're not together at the beginning of the movie. It starts, like, midway through, right?
Yeah.
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 And is she, how old are they? Like, are they in their 20s? Because she works at a bar, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and he works at a bank. I mean, like, they're definitely not high school students, but they act like high school students. They act like high school.
That was, yeah, they act like high school students. That was difficult for me to follow.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always wondered that myself, is exactly how old are they supposed to be? I mean, in something like Drop Dead Fred, when we saw Phoebe Cates, and we're like, it's so weird that Carrie Fisher is her best friend, because there seems like such an age difference. Mm-hmm. Whereas in this one, she feels way too old to be.
Like,
in,
Billy seems like a kid. Like, Billy seems like maybe grade 10 to me. Like, the way... And that's just kind of, like, by the way his parents treat him. Plus, he seems to be, like, best friends with this neighbor kid.
This, like, 12-year-old.
Who's, like, 12 years. Who's, like, considerably younger than him.
Yeah. Mm. Talking about the comics that they've got and all that. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's 18. And, like, the relationship is weird because it seems like him walking her home that night is the first time they've ever talked or something, even though they seem to sit next to each other at the bank.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like they should already be besties or something.
I think it would have been better if they had, like, you know, like all the kids that played in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Like, that dynamic, that group dynamic of kids, it's more believable that they're all... Well, they're all the same age. They're all hanging out. They're all, you know, have similar interests, and they come across this gizmo. Like, that would to me would be a better background with all the younger characters, I think.
Yeah, like, I mean, Judge Reinhold is also one of those ones that Judge Reinhold always feels old to me, no matter what he's in. Like, even Fast Times at Ridgemont High, where he's even younger than he is in this movie, he still always feels like he's 30 to me.
That
for him to come in to that one scene being such a slime bag hitting on Kate, it feels weird, because, you know, with his, come on over, I have cable. What a flex in the 80s. I love it. But yeah, I mean, it's just like, Judge Reinhold, I assume that all three of these guys were probably in school together, but he seems so much older. That's almost how it feels, is like they're all fresh out of high school, and they all went and got jobs without having to go to college. I don't know, like, it's just...
Man, wouldn't that be funny, like, if Axel came out of, you know, from up from behind? It's like, I'm here!
Well,
what are you doing here?
What would have been great is when Billy can't start his car, that he finds out that there's a banana in the tailpipe or something.
Good stuff. I love the cross promotion.
I mean, it is one of those, like, all these movies, every time we watch not every 80s movies, but like anyone that's like in this vein of these like young kids, they all seem like they're in the same universe. Like, you could, they remind me of like Castle Rock or something, like that's like the Stephen King universe all combined into this like one place.
Or the View Askew universe or something like
that. Yeah, like you could do the same thing with Gremlins, Goonies, like all the, like,
well, you could even throw in movies like the Burbs too, like really anything with Corey Feldman is kind of, like, it's almost like it's the Feldman verse is what it is.
Yeah, the Lost Boys.
yeah
there you go. Yeah,
they were made all the same back then. It was a kind of almost like a cookie cutter style, right?
Yeah, and they all take place in the Back to the Future set.
Yeah, and then there's some sort of weird extraterrestrial.
Yeah, they're all filmed on the Universal backlot. That's what has them all. So it's the Universal universe. It's the Universal.
I don't know.
I was not expecting the story behind why Kate hates Christmas to be that like terrifying story about her dad.
Oh my god! Gonna, right?
Gonna haunt my memories forever.
That was odd.
Yeah. Because she plays it off earlier as, I just don't like Christmas. I've never liked Christmas. And then it's like, you might as well have had her lit from below, where it's like, it was a dark and stormy night. I was waiting for my parents.
I don't understand how that furthered the plot, though. Like, why do we need to know that? Like, why is that part of the backstory? It almost seemed like it's so irrelevant.
Yeah.
The first time I watched the movie, I thought I had missed something, that like the gremlins were responsible for killing her dad in the chimney.
No, and they didn't. They were completely separate.
Yeah, but then the second time I watched it, I was like, "Oh, I wasn't paying attention. It's literally just an anecdote from her past."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird.
It's a dark story. Why are there so many boy gremlins and no girl gremlins? It's like Smurfette. The ratio is way off. Like, at one point in the bar, we see like two, maybe three girl gremlins walking around. But like, why is the ratio so off when these things multiply?
Oh, I didn't even realize they had like, I thought they were kind of asexual.
Yeah, I thought they were all kind of like that too.
Just given the fact that they clearly don't have to have any sort of intercourse in order to reproduce, they just have to get wet.
Yeah, oh, well, okay.
That's usually the first step.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, see, because there are a few of them wearing dresses and wearing lipstick, but I guess this could be like, you know, in The Longest Yard when you have Tracy Morgan running around on
the sidelines in a dress. It could be like that.
Absolutely.
The stereotypical.
They were ahead of their time. You know, they were transsexual gremlins.
Because I also, like, didn't really understand Gizmo. These are his children, technically, but he doesn't really care for them at all.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really want any part of them.
Something happens, we'll just grow some more.
Yeah, and why does every other one have to be an asshole? Like, why can't there be a second nice one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what made Gizmo so special that he was just like... Like, Gizmo clearly knows that it's after midnight and he doesn't want to eat. But he doesn't tell Billy that while he's just shoved these chicken in the box here.
Yeah.
I don't know. Chosen one.
Yeah, he's Neo. He's the Neo of the Gremlins Matrix.
He knew he was in the Matrix. He's like, you know what? I'm woke.
I mean, there is kind of a parallel. Like, the rest of the Stripe and the rest of the Gremlins are kind of like Agent Smith, just trying to, like, once Agent Smith goes virus and he's just trying to replicate all over the place, like, that's kind of what they're doing.
So you think the Wachowski brothers saw this and they're like, got it?
Well, Wachowski sisters now.
Yes, sisters now.
Yeah, because it's now Lana and I forget the other one's name. But yeah, I guess with another like Matrix parallel, I mean, when Agent Smith replicates himself, like there's always like a flash of light and whatever, you know, for some reason, when he jumps in the pool, everything starts like going crazy with disco lights at that point. So you've got those special effects. Why does it do that? Why does the pool suddenly start smoking and lighting up? And
to signify the change.
Yeah. But when he gets water spilled on him in the first place, there's not any kind of light show that happens.
Mm.
I mean, his back starts bubbling, but there's no light show. Why does the pool at the YMCA get the light show?
Hmm. That's a good question.
Yeah.
And how much water, did they ever explain how much water you need?
It doesn't look like much considering the paintbrush bottle that's spilled on him. But no, now with this light show, though, shouldn't the light show have killed the gremlins as they're replicating? Because it's bright light. The rules are flawed, I tell you.
Maybe when they're replicating, their eyes somehow get glossed over.
Yeah, but it's not looking at the light that kills them. It's just being in the light that kills them.
Mm. See, there's another plot hole. You have to ignore those.
Yeah, it's definitely a movie you can't think too much about.
Which doesn't
make it like great for this podcast, but like
that makes it perfect for the podcast.
If you had to recommend this movie on your podcast, it would be take some edibles. Watch this movie. It's going to be amazing.
Oh, it helped. I'll tell you that much. No, but here's another one that I noticed is like when the gremlins are attacking him in the department store, there's one point where the gremlin comes at Billy with a chainsaw and he grabs a Louisville Slugger, a wooden baseball bat to stop the chainsaw. And this chainsaw attack lasts for a solid like 2.5 minutes. And that whole time, this gremlin was not able to cut through a wooden bat. Billy was able to fend him off long enough for Gizmo to come to the rescue.
Wow. You have to understand. He's got tiny hands. He's just like...
And it could have been a dull chainsaw as well. We don't know how well that chainsaw's been maintained.
So the department store is selling a brand new dull chainsaw.
It's okay. It's refurbished, gently used. I mean, there is also like, how does a gremlin know what a gun is, or how to use
they
it?
They seem to be pretty adaptable. Like they learn fairly quickly, I think.
They learn really quickly.
Very quickly. Yeah.
I don't know if I would be able to walk into a projector booth and figure out how to turn a projector on. Like,
the first thing they learn is how to party, and then the second thing they learn is how to shoot guns. It's like they're in Texas.
Yeah. And Katie keeps serving them. Like, why is she actually...
Yeah, that was what I didn't get. Like they don't know how to talk. Like, why is she... They're trying to like appease them.
Yeah.
Like, if you were her, wouldn't you just get out? Wouldn't you just be like, these are monstrous demons. Like, I need to leave this place.
Yeah. None of them came in and said, you know, serve us or die. They're not speaking English and they're splashing alcohol all over the place. They're getting themselves wet. So is it only water that makes them multiply? Is it an allergic reaction to water that isn't found in alcohol, but shouldn't it be found?
Do they say that they can't drink? Because to me, there's a difference between getting wet and drinking.
Yeah, those are different things.
No, but they're splashing it all over themselves too.
Mm. I can only think of the one where the one is like laying on the bar with the faucet open.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But, like, they've also got, like, whiskey glasses in their hand, and they're throwing their arms in the air, so it's just splashing all over the place.
Maybe it's because they're demons, and alcohol is the devil's juice. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, but Mr. Wing at the beginning does say they can't have water, not even to drink.
That's true.
So, I mean, that's why I asked, like, how are they surviving, even?
I think it's just water universal. Universally, it's just water. Yeah. Can't touch it, can't drink it.
So what I didn't get was like the water seems to be like the multiplication. Does water hurt them, or does water just make them multiply?
It just makes
not that
them
it
multiply.
Really answers the question, because I mean, if so, like, say if they were drinking, wouldn't they have just been like multiplying all over the place?
Exactly.
That's kind of thing. Yeah.
That's what I was asking about the snow too. Shouldn't they have just been multiplying all over the place? That one actually is water.
Maybe the multiplication is a defense mechanism for when water touches them and it hurts them, but then they're like, as a defense mechanism, they're like, ah, it hurts so much.
Well,
but it's light that hurts. Like, light hurts,
okay.
Water multiplies, food transforms. That's the medicine.
There's also, like, you have to think that the gremlin, similar to how, like, Raichu is an evolved form of Pikachu, the gremlin is the evolved form of the Mogwai, so maybe the gremlin has, like, more resistance to some of these rules because it's already, like, you know, been exposed to whatever it's been exposed to, and then it's gone through its metamorphosis to become a gremlin. So maybe when it comes to water specifically, it has a little bit more choice in the matter. I don't know.
Oh, okay. Because it is when he climbs to the top of the fountain and sticks his finger in. Yeah, maybe that's what the glowing is. That's him giving himself over to the multiplication process.
Because it kind of seems like Stripe, that's his name, right, as the leader? He's the leader of the gremlins. He's kind of like the alpha, and it seems like maybe only he has the power as like the king gremlin to reproduce or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but technically I think that Gizmo would be the king gremlin.
Well, but Gizmo, he's a lesser form, I think.
Because he's not evolved.
It seems like, yeah.
Because he's still Charizard instead.
He needs to embrace his final form.
Man, this is a weird movie.
Yeah, like, well, I feel like in my mind I'm writing my own version of Gremlins 2 that probably is not at all.
No. Gremlins 2 is the same thing, but the puppets are better.
That's
okay. Was there ever talk of making a Gremlins 3?
I think there might have been. Nothing I came across, but there probably was. I don't know.
Yeah.
I remember that Gremlins 2 has John Glover in it, though. From Smallville fame,
yeah.
Lionel Luther. Well, here's one. I mean, you say that this is a weird movie. What about that neighbor character of his? I mean, that's definitely someone we haven't talked about yet. But boy, did he want to make a statement about how he feels about foreigners?
Oh, yeah. That was such a
just stereotypical American in an 80s movie. These foreign vehicles, they're nothing compared to our American muscle.
Yeah, and I think, again, that movie was, and that line probably was put in there to appease the American audience.
Yeah.
Because like, it's like, I think if you look at it more deeply, although it's weird because Steven Spielberg had a hand in it, but this movie could have been a social commentary about Gremlins being the foreigners coming in to small town New York and taking over their space and taking over their shit. There's so many rules, can't get it wet, get no light, all this kind of stuff. It's because they're trying to impose their religion and their self upon us Americans. We don't want it. So let's kill him. Let's kill them all. Yeah.
I feel like I need to underscore that with the American national anthem.
America is beautiful or something.
Yeah, no, I should have bought a Zenith. Ah, oh, foreign TVs. Like, it's just... And I mean, of course, he's also the only one that talks about gremlins beforehand. But there's that one point where he's pissed drunk, and he leaves the bar. And Billy and Kate actually watch him get into his truck, try to start his truck. It doesn't start, and they're like, maybe you should walk home. And he's like, yeah, I'll take a walk. And it's just like, really? You let him get all the way into his truck? And it was only because it didn't start that you told him that he shouldn't be driving?
Yeah, again, very relaxed rules back then.
Yeah. Talking about gremlins the whole time. I did read that Mogwai does mean gremlin in Cantonese.
Oh.
The direct translation is the devil, or...
Well, it's devil, demon, or gremlin. It's kind of like, you know, one of those. Those are the synonyms for Mogwai in Cantonese.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what my parents were talking to about. Okay, that's why they called me that all the time. Now I know. Damn it.
But they make it sound cute by saying that, right?
Yeah. You know?
Oh.
My Mogwai.
Little Mogwai. Oh.
Yeah, okay.
Kingsley can call his kids that now.
Yeah. Totally will.
There you
totally
go.
Will. It's gonna be a term of endearment. Oh, you little Mogwai. Oh, yeah.
Now, one thing I am surprised by with this movie is that we actually don't get a lot of deaths. Like, I mean, they end up letting the racist guy live in the end, but then they give you the death of Mrs. Deagle, which definitely feels earned. But really, outside of that, who else did they kill?
Is the black guy? Does the black guy get killed?
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, opening scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, oh, okay. Okay, so the teacher, here's another question. Why were the kids in school on Christmas Eve? They established that it was Christmas Eve, and they're watching that video, and then he's like, okay, have a good night. It's Christmas Eve. Go home. And it's like, why were the kids in school all the way up until then? But yeah, I read, though, that his death, originally it was going to be like a face full of hypodermic needles.
And it was...
Once again, Steven Spielberg stepped in and he's like, no, a single one is enough.
Man, this movie could have been like full on horror, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
but instead we get, what, like four deaths, five deaths? How many deaths were there in the... I mean, we named three of them.
Yeah, not many.
I mean, there's a few gremlin deaths.
Well, blender, there's plenty of gremlins. And
there's lots of them, yeah, but there's lots of tons of gremlins.
There's the explosion. I mean, yeah, no, they all die, but it's, yeah, actual human deaths. Like, there is the one point where they go and hide in the bank, and she tells her horrible story about her father dressed up as Santa and dying in the chimney. I'm just glad they didn't have a line of, we were wondering what that smell was. But they come out of there, and all the chaos that has been happening in the streets of all the gremlins chasing people around, now all of a sudden there's no one anywhere, but you also don't see any bodies.
Maybe the gremlins ate them.
Oh, wow.
Right? They just, that's what they eat. Okay. They ate all those people in the McDonald's.
Well, yeah, if that script had come out, yeah. I don't know. The movie's flawed.
that we have firmly established.
No, but yeah. I agree with you, Colin. I agree with you that if they would have just went balls to the wall with that R rating, it could have been a much more of a cult horror.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I think so.
There's one point that Spike gets hit in the head, and we hear the sound of Tweety Birds, and it's like, how am I supposed to take this seriously as a horror movie when you have the Tweety Bird sound?
You know, it's just.
I think when she was stabbing the gremlins, I don't think there was much sound. Like the sound, there weren't a lot of gruesome sound effects.
Yeah.
That I recall. It was more like just like there's part of the music is like, you know, like you were like in Psycho, right? One of those kind of things, but it wasn't like disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the one exploding in the microwave, that was pretty bad. And I mean when Spike melts and you have his bones come up at the end, like it's just like, you know, that last, the 80s last minute bad guy pop up that happens, but instead it's Spike's bones or Stripe. I keep wanting to call him Spike. I mean, Stripe's bones. But yeah, I mean, that was also gruesome. And then they like melt into the floor.
Yeah. That's probably where Steven Spielberg got in Indiana Jones when the guy's.
Oh, the guy's face melts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then our Furbies, do you think Furbies were modeled against Gremlins?
I totally think they were.
Yeah, because Furbies came out like a few years later, like probably not that much longer.
Yeah.
And I think the first one looked like a little gremlin.
Well, they all had the bald ears, and it was like a tie-dyed gizmo is what they looked like, because they were always like really loud colors as well.
It's all about profit. Marketing, money.
Yeah. Does Caroline actually exist anywhere? Like, because there was the one point where Billy and Kate are walking home and they pass the carolers. Have you ever had a caroler visit your house?
No.
I've never seen it in real life. I've only ever seen it in the movies.
Okay. It's another one of those things. Only ever seen it in the movies.
I had a question, actually, that I just remembered I wanted to bring up. Do you guys think that It's a Wonderful Life, it has to hold the Guinness Book of World Records, if there is such a thing, for, like, the movie that appears in the most other movies?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think it's in... I've watched... I don't know. I've probably watched, like, 20 Christmas movies so far, and I would venture to say that somebody watching It's a Wonderful Life has appeared in at least 10 of them. Like, at least half.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd
well,
say
because
so.
It's such a classic. Such a classic, right? So, yeah. When you're watching... Christmas movie, people are watching these classics.
But what is it about? Like, so, like, I love It's a Wonderful Life. I if someone made a movie about my life, I would be the one watching it. But it has to then be considered like the quintessential Christmas movie, I think.
Yeah, or it's the cheapest one to get the rights to.
Or that, yeah, I don't know.
Because, yeah, I mean, you always see Jimmy Stewart, you know, running through the snow. That's always where it is in the movie when it's on. Also, him running through the snow, yelling, or
it's that, or it's him saying he's gonna lasso the moon. It's like one of those two scenes.
Yeah. Or no, sometimes it's you know, every time a bell rings. Sometimes we're
Sometimes we're at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. You never see anyone sitting around watching Elf. You know, no one's ever got Christmas Vacation playing in the background, but it's got to be a price thing. We need to establish it's Christmas, and they're giving this away in quantity, not quality. You know, like that's what they're doing. They're instead of charging one person $50,000, they're charging five people $10,000. You know. Yeah, because I definitely can't think of anything else that's ever in the background that much.
Yeah, I remember it was like in Home Alone, right? That's the one movie that was Macaulay Culkin was looking at.
Yeah, we saw it in Elf. Yeah, it's in Lethal Weapon, I think.
Really?
Yeah. Huh.
I know I've mentioned It's a Wonderful Life a few times on this show in my sponsorship corner. So
Actually, it was also in a Christmas Vacation, and I think Christmas Vacation should be that's a movie that I always see during Christmas.
Well, see, what I would want to do is if I got rights to a movie like Home Alone to put in the background of my movie, I would want to make sure it's the scene in Home Alone where they're watching It's a Wonderful Life. That's
totally. Yeah.
Or Angels with Filthy Souls, one of the two. Oh, I've got a note here. I'll go back to the science teacher for a second. They kind of try to turn the science teacher a little sinister at one point, don't they? Like when he comes at him with the syringe and he's like, it's just a little blood. You're not going to miss it.
You know? Yeah, I couldn't tell if the science teacher was just meant to be like a normal guy or if he had some sort of nefarious scheme at play.
Yeah. First of all, my thought was, you know, well, if you're going to take a blood sample and this Mogwai has no way of replenishing its fluids, of course he's going to miss this blood.
Yeah.
Because he can't drink, I guess. I don't know. But the other thing, and this is what makes me think that he is like this nefarious, like evil guy. He takes a bite of his sandwich, looks at his watch, and goes, oh, wow, it's late. I got to go. Then he just drops the sandwich on the counter and walks out. Who does that? Only a psycho would do that. He didn't take it with him. He didn't wrap it up. He didn't throw it in the garbage. He just dropped it on the counter and walked out of there.
That's a dick move.
Well, he sure paid for it, didn't he?
That's what you get. Syringe in the butt.
Better than in the face, I suppose.
Oh, in the face is classic. In the face.
Go back to Crow with the, I put him in every major organ in alphabetical order. here's another indication that it's 1984. One of my favorite things in the department store was when they walked past the video camera where it says, see yourself on TV. Look at that, 1984. Back when it was exciting to see yourself on a wall of TVs in a department store.
That's true.
What is this sorcery and these magic boxes?
Different times.
Yeah. So, yeah, we end the movie with all the Mogwais getting blown up when they're in the theater. I find it interesting the mix of special effects that they used when it came to the Gremlins and the Mogwais. Like, some of them are so obviously puppets, some of them are animatronics, but then, like, in the movie theater, you have what is clearly animation on the movie screen of them all running towards the movie when they see Billy in the background.
Yeah, it's almost like claymation.
that's at the one point where they're all marching up the street. That one is totally stop motion.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, they've used, like, all the kinds of...
those are the movie tricks.
Yeah.
Those were the movie tricks back then, right?
Yeah.
You didn't have LucasArts yet.
The ending of the movie, we end up having Grandfather come back and basically say that... you guys are irresponsible pet owners, and takes the Mogwai back, but we have to make sure that Gizmo gets a chance to say bye to Billy and to the dog. Bye, Woof Woof. Aw, what a touching ending. But yeah, I mean, I like how Grandfather comes in and is just basically like, fuck you guys. First of all, you shouldn't have had him. Second of all, you guys can't handle it. You know?
I mean, like, I thought it was funny that Grandpa comes back after everything is all said and done. I feel like it would have been more epic if when he was at like the top of the fountain, if the grandfather would have just like came through the window and like kung fu'd this gremlin and like just beat the shit out of all the gremlins and like that's a, in
Mr.
my mind
Miyagi'd
that's how
him.
Yeah, like that's how this movie should have
but that would have been unrealistic.
Yeah,
that would have been unrealistic.
Like they missed. I mean, it's still like Asian stereotype, but they missed a good opportunity to throw like some epic kung fu
save the day scene at the end of this movie.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, and instead we get Mr. Peltzer giving him like his last smokeless ashtray.
Yeah.
Like why can't his ashtray even work? When we see the guy at the gas station where it's just smoking, like why? Oh my god!
But yeah, no, you know,
makes no sense.
Yeah, but at least grandfather gets it to go home with his Mogwai.
Was Gizmo the only one that spoke? I can't remember.
Well, all of the gremlins kind of, you know, like Billy. Like they made sounds like that. Like they all kind of talked.
Because I remember Gizmo saying stuff like,
"Oh, thank you."
Gizmo was saying like "woof woof" and "bright light."
Yeah, bright light, bright light, bright light. Yeah.
But I don't remember any of the other gremlins saying
no. Because they're all in the theater going, "Hi ho, hi ho, it's Optimus Creature." Like that, yeah. So they all make kind of mostly English noises.
Mm, okay.
They're just not going to come into a bar and be like, "Bitch, give me a whiskey," you know.
do that with the gremlin voice.
Yeah.
Bitch, give me a whiskey.
And there we go. That is Gremlins. Oh boy, Colin Kingsley on IMDb. It scored 7.2 out of 10. It has a Metascore of 70. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 85 on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 78%. Oh boy, but Colin, those are just numbers. Like a sword to the head. No, I know. Yeah, I guess that's the best one there is. I don't know. Like, yeah.
I don't know about that. I don't know if I agree with that. I'd give it like a 2.9
out of 10. Hold on. I'm still working through something here. Like like a gizmo on a dartboard. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, I'm going to go to Google today for the reviews. Maybe I'll throw in some Rotten Tomatoes, but these Google ones are pretty good. Mandingo gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, "This is an odd duck of a movie. Having not seen it as a child, I was fairly perplexed watching it for the first time recently. With its strange tone, far too gruesome and dark for smaller children, but not scary or complex enough for adults, the main issue is the characters, who are the stupidest bunch of people you could ever meet in a movie, and always make the worst decisions to push the plot along, something modern horrors get a lot of grief for. And the ultra-bland hero, Billy, who is the dopiest of all. Having said all that, I still enjoyed the movie because the gremlins are undoubtedly a fantastic creation, and there are definitely some memorable moments. The music is great, too, and really complements the wacky tone."
Wow.
I think the mom is the only one that makes a good decision, because when she comes into the house and she hears noises upstairs, the first thing she grabs a fucking knife. And you know, and goes and investigates. Like, I mean, yeah, okay, maybe getting out of the house would have been a better decision, but she grabbed a weapon. Like, she didn't think, "Oh, that could be Billy up there." She's like, "No, something's wrong.
I'm taking
a knife." Yeah.
Yeah. The next one is from Olivia Evans, again, 3 out of 5 stars, and says, "I watched this movie when I was in second grade. Now, being about 7 years since I have seen the movie, I would not recommend this movie for families with small kids, like second graders, especially when you watch it at night right before bed. I'm not pointing any fingers here, just do better than my parents. Anyway, being the tiny second grader I was, I wouldn't go into the bathroom without the light on for weeks due to being scared that evil gremlins would come out of the toilet. Now, after therapy and time, I can now enter the bathroom when the light isn't on and not be scared." And then she writes, "The last sentence was a joke. I'm fine. No traumatized children here." Probably should have just left it with the trauma.
Is she 14? Trying to work through the math of her review, because she says she saw it for the first time in second grade, but it's been 7 years since she's seen it. So seen it as an adult, or is she 14? Like, the first time she saw it was 7 years ago.
Yeah, by my math, she's 14.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. try to make sense of this one.
Okay.
Saul Gonzalez gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "This is by far one of the best adaptations of villain to the big screen. By far the best Gremlins 1984 movie made. You will not regret seeing it. Not only the actors are very good, but it also maintains a real essence in Raw, and not to mention the main hero without spoiling much. I can tell you that he is very ruthless and sick. A modern version of the Green Goblin, and little and nothing envies his counterparts in the comics. In addition to maintaining a rhythm which it does not bore you, it is true that in certain parts, the movie has its defects, but these do not take away what I achieve and what I mark.
Wow. No way. There's no way.
I'm confused.
Did this person watch Gremlins or something else?
Did it go through Google Translate?
I have no idea.
Okay. Somebody obviously paid for a review here.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's much like how I said that Mogwai means devil, demon, and gremlin. Some of those words sound like they were supposed to be something else, but it's possible that Google Translate chose the wrong synonym.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. Or no, maybe not the last one. Last one for Google. Morgan Evans gives the movie 1 out of 5 stars and says, "When I was a child, my dad brought this movie home for us to watch, and I wish he didn't. I watched half of the movie and immediately ran out of the room. I ended up forgetting about the movie because we threw away the CD, but in second grade, something happened. They put Gremlins on Netflix. For about 1 year, I was terrified to go on Netflix because I didn't want to risk seeing Gremlins. I knew they weren't real, but the sight of them terrified me, including the small furry ones. Oh. My sister one time was on Netflix, and I turned my head in case she passed the movie, and she said, 'I am done,' and I turned my head and BOOM! Gremlins. I was deeply terrified. I have never been that terrified in my life. I won't watch the movie again, even though I'm not scared anymore, but I don't recommend you watch this movie at all."
Wow.
Wow.
Those are polar opposites.
That sounds a little like Joel's irrational child's play fear that he talked about.
Yeah. Okay, let me see if any of these Rotten Tomatoes ones can live up
to these. Oh, here's a good...
Theodore M., Rotten Tomatoes user, gives it 3 out of 5 stars and says, "You could call it a Christmas movie. As a grown-up, you watch it and are like, how hard is it to remember some simple rules? Okay, now y'all deserve to die."
Nice.
They kind of do, yeah.
Yeah, that's a more realistic review right there.
Yeah, and meanwhile, it's like all the people that were involved in making this mistake were the people that lived at the end. Billy lives, his dad lives, his mom lives. Well, I guess his mom was... Like I said, she was a badass. It wasn't her fault, but Billy and his dad, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And Corey Feldman, they all live.
You know what? We're just going to cap it there. These other two are kind of... They can't live up to...
This might have been the best. Google really brought it
home on this one when it came to the reviews.
Right on.
I like it.
So yeah, like I said, 70 and 7.2 on IMDb and 85 and 78. Wow, like from 70 to 85, like that's a high ranking film according to IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. So Kingsley, where does it fall for you?
Well, I think I still stand by, 2.9 out of 10.
Okay.
I mean, even by suspending my disbelief, there's too many plot holes. There's things that didn't make sense to me. I didn't think it was scary. I didn't even think most of the acting were all that great.
Yeah.
And I think it was a social commentary about foreigners coming to the country, damn it!
Right on. Okay, Colin, what about you? It's your first viewing of Gremlins. What did you think?
I don't know. To be honest, I don't really think much of this movie. I think that... For whatever, I thought I was gonna like it, but I agree with Kingsley. Like, I just think there's too much wrong with it to really like it. I think there was a better movie to be made, and I think it kind of suffers that they held back. They should have went the full R.
Yeah.
And they should have just, like, really went for it, and I think they would have had something, but...
They needed some nudity.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
They needed, like, the arachnophobia. We needed the girl in the shower and the...
Yeah, they needed Phoebe Cates coming topless out of the pool.
That's what they needed.
Yeah, they needed Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
I thought that the gremlin, like, the animatronics for like Gizmo were cool. Like, I liked the puppets and I like kind of all those like practical effects that they used for the gremlins. But that's pretty much the only positive I think I can point out.
Yeah. Yeah, I know watching this one, I mean, it is one that I enjoyed when I was younger, but it's been years since I've seen this. And I kind of lean towards what you're saying, where totally it's all over the place.
Yeah.
Between Mrs. Deagle, who, I mean, like, her character completely changes from what we see of her in the bank to when we see her at home as a crazy cat lady. Figures that she was a crazy cat lady. But, like,
yeah.
Even her as a character, her tone shifts so much in these two different locations. But you have her doing her Mrs. Hannigan thing, like I said. I don't know. You've got some parts that are funny, but some parts that aren't. And like Kingsley said, the acting was kind of subpar. After seeing Phoebe Cates in both this and Drop Dead Fred so close together, you may have had a crush on her when you were younger, but I don't know if a lot of that could be based on her acting ability, because she reminds me a little of Ally Sheedy in the fact that there's nothing spectacular about what she does as an actress.
You know what I've actually just realized in this exact moment? Phoebe Cates, like, I like Phoebe. I do think she's a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
But when I'm thinking Phoebe Cates, who I'm thinking of is Jennifer Connelly.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, the horse riding scene in, what's that movie called? You know, she's riding the horse, and the guy's just staring at her in the department store. Oh, what's that movie?
Riding the horse in the department store.
Jennifer Connelly. That's her. That's when she was in her prime, too, and, oh, man.
I don't know.
About her in Labyrinth.
Yeah, Labyrinth or The Rocketeer. Oh, she was gorgeous. Oh,
yeah, The Rocketeer, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, so that's kind of an interesting thing that you just discovered in your in your own mind. Okay, yeah.
I was like, Sean's right. I don't think I'm thinking about the right woman.
Yeah, because really, outside of this movie and Drop Dead Fred, literally the only other thing I know her for is Fast Times at Ridgemont High. That's why that's the only movie I ever mention when I talk about Phoebe Cates.
So Colin, look up a movie called Career Opportunities.
Career Opportunities, okay.
That's the Jennifer Connelly one. See, I haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah, that's like early 90s.
So we'll have to get you back at some point, and you can bring us Career Opportunities.
That's what we could do.
We have talked about wanting our guests to bring us a movie of their own sometimes.
There you go.
So there we go.
Prepare the Phoebe Cates, Jennifer Connelly dynamic.
That's right. Yeah, it's Dermot Mulroney and Dylan McDermott all over again. That's that's what Jennifer Connelly and Phoebe Cates are. But I do echo your sentiments, though, Colin, where it's just like, there is a better movie. They should have gone for the hard R. And
yeah.
Because tonally, it is all over the place, and I don't know who this movie is for. Because it seems too old for kids, but it seems too young for adults. And something I liked as a kid, this time, I don't think I can go much higher than like a 55. Like,
you know, this is kind
that's
of
generous.
This is kind of a right down the middle movie, and a lot of that might be nostalgia. I go higher than you no matter what, Kingsley, I think. But I mean, like, yeah, 50, 55, that's the highest I would go. But it's probably a sub 50 movie for me. Like, it's not a great movie, but I'm glad I have revisited it. But I don't know if I'll have to revisit it again. But I am curious to go watch Gremlins 2, The New Batch, which is always the one that I liked more. And to see whether it really is just this one movie or whether they're really both pieces of shit, because...
Well, at least the animatronics, that will be better.
Yeah, yeah, the effects are upgraded, yeah. Well, there we go. That is Gremlins, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy, a big thank you to our buddy, our hat trick guest, Kingsley Leung. Kingsley, thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it, as always. Love it.
And we'll have to see about Career Opportunities sometime in 2022.
Yeah, if you can try to bring someone in to recreate the scene, that'd be even better.
Oh. Well, I've got no problem seeing something else with Jennifer Connelly in it, that's for sure. But I will say that the horse scene that always sticks out in my mind, though, of a beautiful woman on a horse, that's got to be Brittany Daniels, Joe Dirt.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Classic.
Classic. Dang. Dang, says Kid Rock. Damn straight you do, Kid Rock. Mr. Rock, you are right. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out is, well, you know, all the usual stuff, guys. Go give us 5 stars on whatever app you listen to your podcasts on. It helps drive us up the charts, helps us get noticed. Tell your friends. All those things like word of mouth that just help us find listeners, help us build a base. Or if you want to go above and beyond and help us out with a monetary donation, you can become a producer of the show and go over to patreon.com/I used to like this one and become part of our Patreon family. You would become an executive producer of the show, and then you would get a shout out just like our current executive producer, Joshua Blum.
And be sure to check out our website, www.iustolikethisone.com. There you can find links to all of our podcast episodes as well as our social media platforms. We have Instagram, we have Twitter, we have Facebook. I almost blanked on Facebook for some reason. But yeah, go on there, check us out. If you want to email us, you can do so at iustolikethisone@gmail.com. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
It's the same way I almost blanked on Patreon just a moment ago. So I guess we're both just, we're in the Christmas spirit and we're just burned out from Gremlins. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we take a look at another Christmas movie on I Used to Like This One. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Ooh.
Another one in the books.
Another one. Yeah, another one in the can.